Let's see, we've got reports from standing committee.
February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 8, Engrossed, Child Abuse Reporting Requirements, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 21, Engrossed, Peace Officer Immunity, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Schiffer. No, Senator Hicks, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. It says do pass.
With the following amendment.
It did say that, didn't it?
No.
Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Schiffer. No, Senator Hicks. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 216, Engrossed, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Consideration of bills on second reading. We're in the midst of amendments. The next amendment is amendment number 20 to Senate file 1, and the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate file 1, second reading amendment number 20, budget 080, Department of Corrections.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 20 to Senate file 1. Members of the Senate, there was a footnote in there, and you recall the discussion that we had, is that we have a situation at the Honor Farm in Riverton where we have 70 beds available. We're full in Casper, and we have 70 in excess at Torrington. And so rather than to build another pod at Torrington at this time, we were going to roll them through the system. So we'll take the 70 out of Casper, put them in Riverton, and move the 70 from Torrington to Casper. And when this was first brought to the Appropriations Committee, we thought it was a one-time amount of money, $420,000, to do that. And that's the language we had in the footnote in the budget bill. I have since discussed this with the director, and he's of the opinion that it's an ongoing expense. I have a disagreement with him because I think you still have the same number of people. You're still providing the same services. Why should the cost go on? So what we did, and the purpose of this amendment, Mr. President, is part of its cleanup. We took out probationers and parolees and put inmates. That's just a cleanup part. But the other part we did is that we deleted the one time, but we said he shall come back to the Joint Appropriations Committee when we do the next biennial budget, and that will be in the expanded budget, and he'll have to justify it to us at that time. I would ask for your support.
Any discussion? Question? Ready for the question? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 20 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment number 20 is passed the Senate. Next amendment is amendment number 24. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 24, budget 085, Wyoming Business Council.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I'd like to move second reading amendment number 24 to Senate File 1, the budget bill. Ladies and gentlemen, what this amendment does is recognizes the fact that the whole marketing scene in regard to Wyoming commodities, particularly energy, and more particularly probably natural gas, those market shares have virtually changed overnight. I'll talk, first of all, what the amendment addresses specifically, and then I'll give you some rationale behind this particular amendment. But what this does is goes into the budget and allows for a transfer of $500,000 to be given to the Business Council to execute expanded foreign trade efforts, including expenses of meetings and travel. What precipitated this is I heard early in the summer a report primarily focused on natural gas in regard to what the market share for natural gas for Wyoming has changed dramatically overnight. We have such entities as the different entities that we've used around Wyoming in order to improve our marketing ability, and we've created transmission authority, pipeline authority, those kinds of things that help us get to those distant markets. Well, we find out now in today's economy that a lot of other areas within the country and around the world through new technologies are discovering more and more natural gas. And so we find that our market share is going down in the Rockies due to the isolation in this new market condition along with the price. So that leaves us with the question, what must we do in order to participate in this much broader market? So it brought to mind with a group of us met about 10 days ago to see kind of where we're at, where we'd like to go, what it's going to take to put ourselves in position to better market not only natural gas, but all Wyoming commodities from tourism to agriculture and certainly coal. Well, one of the foremost recommendations that came out of that group is we need to develop better, more expertise in regard to marketing ourselves worldwide. Those efforts would not only go to outreaches on our parts in terms of perhaps delegations and others, but also ways of going out, extending an invitation for foreign delegates to come to Wyoming. We think that this would be, in my opinion, an investment in regard to how we can present ourselves in this world economy. I could go on at length other than, and I won't, to say that one of the questions that might be asked, is this the best venue in which to direct these? Is this best given to the Business Council, or might it be best left to the governor's office? That question is still kind of being discussed, and if this conversation goes on between today and third reading, there might be some, you know, willingness to adjust this upon third reading. But right now, this is the structure of the amendment. This is the direction that we've taken, and I think there's plenty of rationale to support the idea that this is not money spent, that this is money that's invested. This is, I think, there's a near-term, long-term discussion. We need to do this right away because with large gas deposits being discovered with new technologies off the coast of Africa, there's a pretty limited time frame in which we can get out and compete and present ourselves in this liquid natural gas market. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would defer if the co-sponsor would like to talk a little bit about just how this affects the budget, if he would like. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. The way it's funded is we go into the Wyoming Business Council budget and we remove $500,000 out of the community facilities.
Thank you very much.
Mr. President, that's a very good program. And we still leave a lot of money in that account. I would bring you up to date on if this in fact goes forward and this funding is shifted because of a different prioritization. And, Mr. President, we started with $8 million in that account. We've reduced it by $4 million. They had a carryover of 2.7, so they're at 6.7 is where they would be minus 5, so they're still at 6.25 million. And, Mr. President, I'm not getting a warm, fuzzy feeling, by the way, you're nodding at me about this. Anyway, that's the way we came up with the funding for this. The only thing I would add, Mr. President, to this, and again, it comes from what limited experience I have as a businessman relative to markets, and I understand and appreciate that we are now an international market, and it is the world that we deal with. I can tell you that in many instances in our state, different countries have made substantial investments in Wyoming. And these investments are important. They're in the uranium industry. They're in the soda ash industry. Obviously, they're looking at coal, especially oil and gas. And it only, I think, makes a good idea and makes good sense from a business perspective to have the relationship between the governor and these entities that, so we can continue to promote the products. It's not like we don't have the products. We do. We just need to get them out there to the markets. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. I would resist this amendment, Mr. President. And I guess here's the problem. The techniques that really were pioneered in Wyoming in advancing the Jonah field are known all around the world. We're having the same problem that Wyoming has competing with the Marcellus Shale, and where we used to possibly have markets heading east. Those markets are not as robust. And we think, oh, well, let's look elsewhere in the world. The trouble is, everybody else in the world has the same issue. And I recently returned from working in Nigeria. Tons and tons of gas. What are they looking at? They want to export liquefied natural gas because they don't have a domestic market. They're not the only ones. Everybody, you can see in the trade press where huge rigs are moving into Poland. Poland's never had really adequate gas supplies, but with the new techniques, Poland is now going to, have domestic supplies. Sweden, all these incredible finds all around the world. So our ability from Wyoming to conquer and make a market is virtually non-existent, Mr. President. And if it was possible, and it may be, who should bring the capital to that market? The people that invest and build billions of dollars of pipeline, processing plants, the industry. It's not up to government to do this. And there are very large corporate companies in this market, and they've got the expertise and the know-how. We don't have a comparative advantage, and we would be throwing good money after bad and probably creating marketing plans that somebody else will take advantage of because they're going to be closer to the markets.
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess I'm not certain at this point whether it's a great amendment or not, but last summer we had a situation where there was a coal conference in China. The university set it up. Folks went there. And I was struck that all the coal companies, most of them have agents selling, and they have a presence in China. And not one of them showed up to the coal conference. And what we were told, in essence, is that they got their own thing going. They don't really think that there's really a place for us, the state, in that role. You've got natural gas exporters. These are large, the big, most of them are multinational companies. I'm guessing they have presence all around the world. If they bring to the state a plan to say, look, here's how we can jointly export Wyoming natural gas or Wyoming coal, then we ought to take it, figure out how to work it. I've not heard, and I think we've asked and inquired, how can we help other than just throw money their way? And when we wanted to get into the exports on the terminals, we set aside money to lobby or help open up deep water ports. And even that, we found a hard time finding a role for the state to play. And I wouldn't say we were invited to any of those efforts. So we do know that we've had foreign offices in the old governor's, I think it was the old governor's planning office, that were pretty successful, but that was for small companies to be able to sell product in Asia or to get products manufactured there and brought back here for sale. But it seems to me that we ought to have a plan, and I'm not sure that we've ever created a substitute for what was the governor's planning office and people that were in that role. The business council has been around for a long time. I guess first question, was there a plan presented by the business council? What is the plan, how the money is going to be used? Or are we essentially throwing money out there and said, you go figure out anything, and if it works and you can spend the money, I have no doubt the money will get spent.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I've got some technical questions about the amendment I'd like to have answered when the sponsors get up for their second time. Mr. President, page 70, line 18, it says other fund increase by 500,000 SO. SO is a special fund identified by footnote, and then the footnote talks about appropriation from appropriation for the community facilities program account. Mr. President, series of questions. I don't see an amendment that decreases any appropriation, so this looks to me like an amendment to increase the budget by 500,000, and that's the kind of amendment I vote against. So I'd like an explanation of what's going on, and if there really is some mechanism that I'm not understanding to take it out of a prior appropriation and community facilities account, what's the source of the money in that account, and is, you know, if we're going to use that as the account for the piggy bank to raid this time, is there any money left in the account for anybody else to raid? What's going on here, Mr. President? I'm confused.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm kind of in the same ballpark with the majority floor leader. I'm still trying to decide. I think the concept is good. But my marketing background and the little bit of limited exposure I've had to international marketing does lead me to wonder if this doesn't command a little bit more of our time and attention with respect to developing our markets out there. And I like the idea from my friend from Laramie to have private industry come in and leverage, you know, whatever. But it almost takes sitting down at a table and finding out, you know, I'd be interested in visiting with our state tourism folks. You know, they do these international programs, and I know they're very expensive. When you make a buy overseas, it's like the majority floor leader said, this will certainly get spent, and it won't go as far as you think it will. So that's just a couple of thoughts. I think it conceptually, I certainly agree that Wyoming has got to get out there in the world. I'm just not sure that this is the way to go. Thanks.
Further discussion before the sponsors take their second time? Mr. Vice President.
Well, Mr. President, some good discussion on this, and we do have a plan, but I think that it's something that we could present that to. If this has some traction and moves forward, we could bring that for the third reading or come back with something else. But just to answer my questions for my colleague from Natrona County, the purpose of the way this is drafted is we wanted to be sure and show by footnote that the general fund money appropriation for the capital facilities program of that $500,000 we spent in this manner. And that's why we use the SO account and what we set up to do it. It is general fund money, but it's a reduction in the capital facilities budget. I want everybody to be clear, and it would be utilized in this manner. So that's the purpose and why that was drafted. You know, Mr. Chairman, getting back to the need and of this, I look at it in my business world and the type of things that I do. If I sit in Riverton, Wyoming, and I wait for people to come knock on my door for me to be able to do business, my door does not get knocked on. And I, like a lot of you, have to what I call hustle and get out there and try to move and shake and generate business and do the things that I need to survive in Wyoming. And the reason I like this idea and this discussion is I think that's happening, only it's now extended worldwide. And we have situations where people are not, we're not going there to invest money, they're coming here to invest money. And I think it really makes a lot of sense to let them know we're serious about it, we want them here. You know, it could very well be that they're here and we could get them, catch them here, catch them there. And I think in the big scheme of things, if you promote our state and promote what we have, that there will be some benefits to this. So I still think it's a good idea. There's some good questions, and I think we may need to further work on it.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, rising in support of the amendment, I think it is the right time to have the dialogue, and I'll just, you know, bring back to the Senate a lot of discussions we had at Energy Council in December. I'm very active in that organization and think it's a great organization. But there's a whole revolutionary thing happening here, and that's called the Panama Canal. And they're in the process of widening the Panama Canal so that it can handle big ships. We only have about, I think it's 5 or 6 LNG ports. And if you're going to ship natural gas and be part of the world market, that's how you're going to have to ship it. We've only got like 5 or 6 LNG ports in this country today. Yeah, but with the revolutionary side of what's going to happen with the Panama Canal, I can tell you that's going to open all that up. And if we want to be a player, we've got to participate. And we had a lot of discussion about this because it's clearly there's a huge supply of natural gas in this country today with the Marcellus, with the expansions into Ohio, Rocky Mountain gas. And the discussion from all the members was, is that it's time to start thinking about being an exporter of natural gas and to participate in the worldwide economy. So I rise in support of the amendment. I think it's time to talk about it, and it's time to step up.
Mr. Minority, floor there.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'm against the amendment, but my concern with the amendment is a little bit different. And what it comes down to is basically where we're drawing the funding. If this is an important enough program that it's key to our economic success in the state of Wyoming, let's get it out of the general fund. Let's recognize the importance. Take $500,000 that would otherwise be going to the LISRA, spend it on this program, and expand our exports. What we're doing at the same time here, though, is we're trying to hold tight on the general fund by raiding the community facilities program account, which helps our towns and cities and counties, and there's grant applications. I'm sure a lot of your communities are involved in this as well as mine. And we're just trying to do that, as the senior senator from Natrona County said, because that's the handy coffee can we can get to without having it look like it's a decrease in our budget. Let's either recognize that this is important and spend some money on it, because I personally think the community facility program is important too. It's important to my community. So I'd support a third reading amendment on this if it was general fund, but I can't support it at this time because it raids a program that I do consider important as well. So let's have a true debate just on this issue, bring it out of the general fund, and support it on third reading.
Senator Case?
We're talking here. I looked up. There have been a total of 17 proposed LNG import terminals approved by regulatory authorities in North America. The majority of those are in the USA and approved by FERC. Some of the approvals go back as far as 2005. Looks like some of the major oil and gas companies that we probably all heard of are have received some of those certifications. They seem to be there seems to be plenty of ports coming about, Mr. Chairman. I think at the one time these were put on the drawing board because we thought we were going to be importing gas. Now we're looking at exporting, but certainly the permits have been issued. They're major players, some of which have production facilities in Wyoming. I'm not sure why we need to do this.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. All good comments. And, you know, by your action, it will determine whether or not this gets further discussion, perhaps on third reading or not. That will be up to you. Four questions. It's been proposed, you know, how much do we need to study this? Do we need, in fact, to study it more? I'm going to give you some ideas in regard to what we would hope to accomplish by doing something like this. Conversation needs to continue. Obviously, it's kind of started today. First of all, the governor is very supportive of this, and he's working now on drafting an energy strategy in regard to economic competitiveness and how we can expand ourselves and diversify. But we would hope to, you know, four questions. Access to markets. What are the regulatory, state, federal, or logistic opportunities or impediments of Wyoming commodities and projects? Where are we right now in regard to this world economy? Do we just sit and let it develop it and watch it, or do we try to get out there and compete? Understanding the markets. They're very, very complicated, as has been said. Geopolitical considerations. How do we do the best work? You know, how can we work with a congressional delegation? What are the breadth of business activities? What market advantages and disadvantages does Wyoming have? Distance is certainly one of our disadvantages.
market's understanding of Wyoming. In other words, what is our outreach plan? What is our marketing message? How do we familiarize ourselves? Yes, we have experience in that. We have it through our tourism group. We have it to the University of Wyoming with their international studies. We've talked to those people. Those are assets in developing that. Finally, market adjustments. How does Wyoming gain or maintain a competitive advantage as markets change? And believe me, these things are changing daily. What resources does Wyoming business and industry need to get and stay on top? And, industry can develop it on their own, but there are things that we could perhaps do to help them. And we've done it before, and I talked about pipeline authorities and transmission authorities in that. So with that, I just leave it to your call as to whether you want to pursue it through this or perhaps pursue it through another. I'll put the question on the amendment, Mr. President.
Thank you. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
No.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe. Cooper.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Dockstader.
No.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
No.
Esquivel.
No.
Geis.
No.
Hastert.
No.
Hicks. Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins excused, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 8 ayes, 20 noes, 1 excused, 1 conflict.
By your vote, Amendment number 24, second reading amendment to Senate File 1 has failed. Next amendment is Senator Von Flatern.
I have the privilege of the floor, please.
You may.
Quick explanation of the conflict, and I actually support this amendment, but I was privy to a little bit of discussion beforehand, and somebody used the word charter aircraft. And I tried to figure out how I was part of a bigger group. There's not a whole lot of us, so that was the conflict on that.
Thank you. Second reading amendment number 2, Senate File 1. The reading clerk will read it in. Maybe.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 2, Budgets 006, Administration and Information.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 1. Members of the Senate, this does not take any money away from capital facilities. I want you all to know that, especially you, Mr. President. Mr. President, what this amendment does is it appropriates $726,000 from the Capitol Building Rehabilitation and Restoration account. And, Mr. President, we passed out some information to all of you. You should have these sheets on your desk. And I would bring to your attention the sheet that starts out with the broad, big title, Wyoming State Capital Renovation Budget Sheet. And if you look at that, Mr. President, we did the level 1 and 2 design, and we thought it would be a $400,000 bill. It turns out that it was more than that, so we used some flex contingency to put 165 and finish it, and we did that for the $565,000. The testimony we heard in the committee, Mr. President, is that we're now ready to go to enhanced level 1 and 2 services, and if you look down there, you can see we've done the basic services part of it. Now we want to go to level 1 and 2 services. Mr. President, you can go down that list of all the items that will be completed, and the cost is $726,500. If you look to the next schedule sheet that talks about the capital renovation project schedule summary, Mr. President, what this will do, if this body and the legislature moves forward with this appropriation, it will take us up to the point that we are ready for the level 3 phase. Mr. President, the level 3 phase of the design and pre-construction services funding request, and it really gets this project on the capital moving down the path to do the restoration and take care of some serious issues we have here. Mr. President, there is approximately $91 million in that restoration account that's sitting there. And of course, we have Mr. President as a member of the committee that oversees this and made this presentation to us. We heard a lot of discussion about some of the things that are wrong with our capital, and I don't think I have to tell any of you there's no sprinkler systems in it. You know, if you go up to the dome, I don't know if many of you have been up there, those 2x6 floor joists, I'm not sure if they came from the northeastern part of our state, from some of the lumber up there, timber, but if they did, it was in the late 1900s. And there's a lot of things we need to consider and do this. And one of the things that I think you have to ask yourself is do we want to renovate this capital and keep the wonderful ambiance that we have and be proud of this capital and fix it up right, or do we want to, like some people have suggested, tear it down and start over? I would suggest to you that, at least from my perspective feelings, I would think we ought to restore it. It's a beautiful thing for our state. It is the people's house. It's something that we can all be proud of, and this moves us down the road in that regard, Mr. President. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions. I would hope that you would support this.
Discussion? Senator Cooper.
Mr. President, I was just wondering, unless I didn't hear the sponsor's explanation of this, why this wasn't really, marked up in the regular budget we have, or profiled in there originally. Was there probably some explanation to that? I wonder what it was.
I can. Mr. Minority Floor Leader. Members of the Senate, as chairman of the Select Committee on Legislative Facilities, we've also been approved by Management Council to participate as chairman, myself, and former chairman Illaway, and now chairman Dan Zwanitzer, along with members from not only the Capital, our Rich Cathcart's group, lost the name of it there, the construction management, our architects, designees from each of the five elected officials. And what we have done is, pursuant to previous enactment, we have gone through and selected a design firm. And this design firm is truly an amazing set of people. They've done like the Virginia State Capitol that was built by Thomas Jefferson. So redone the United States Supreme Court. The reason it's not in the budget or wasn't in the budget is that we're in the process of finalizing the contract with this design firm to do the level one and level two study. That's been approved by your State Capitol Building Commission, but there is a second component to it, and that is the enhanced study, which you'll see on the document. I don't have it in front of me right now. But this is where they bring some an amazing technologies to bear on this capital and can do all kinds of fire studies and whatever else. And in order to do that, this is our one chance to, this is an historical building, the most historical building in the state of Wyoming. We only have one chance to do it right. We've came to the committee and said, we really need the enhanced portion of this to move forward. It comes out of a fund that we've already been saving for, and that's why it doesn't appear, it wasn't in the budget in advance, because this, we asked for the additional enhancement of the $726,000. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Question on the amendment. Roll call.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins excused. Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 2 is passed the Senate. Next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 3. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 3, Budget 006, Administration and Information.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. What I'm doing here is this. The issue is with armories around the state of Wyoming. A little while ago, before lunch, you had a document on your desk that shows army locations and conditions, and some are in green, yellow, red, and black stars, and they talk about the condition of these armories. The average age of our armories around the state, Mr. President, is around 37 years, and we embarked about 5 or 6 years ago to completely remodel the Jet and Gillette and Wheatland armories. And, you know, the Rock Springs, Evanston, Lander, and Douglas are the next items on remodel. I've gotten numerous calls from constituents in our area about the dilapidating armories that we have around the state, and I started looking into it a little bit further. It was found that, you know, what is really lacking is the fact that 13% of our military now is females. And when these armories were built, there's not facilities for male and female soldiers. And right now, as the general testified when we were talking about this issue on a bill, is that, you know, a lot of any time that they have the drills, that the females basically they'll have someone stand guard, so the females can, you know, use the latrines and the showers and then swap out. And also, Mr. President, members of the Senate, we found that a lot of these communities rely on these armories for emergency shelters, and also the general testified the fact that these armories had been used for evacuees during the last fire season. And also I'm trying to do is you know, I had initially wanted to incorporate, you know, the kitchens and renovations and the latrine renovations for about 7 armories around the state. And what this does is scales it back, gets the military about $1 million to look at the renovations. As a matter of fact, they've already looked at the renovations, and most of these armories, they have plans already drawn and approved for these renovations. And what we're doing here is asking that they get the money to begin the renovations, and that they have to go through the building commission's approval before they actually do any of the work. I know that the general didn't necessarily put this on his list, and he's, as he told me, was, you know, he kind of backed off from it this year, but after the discussion that has been going around, realized that that was probably not the best thing to do, because these armories are in pretty sad shape. We do need to look at it. And unfortunately, for renovations, there's not a federal match. When we do the kitchens, the federal government will provide the equipment when we have the brick and mortar. But all I'm looking at right now is we need the latrine, the shower facilities upgraded for the female soldiers. And the fact that, as I said, that there's 13% of our females in the Wyoming Guard, And that's expected to increase with the recent combat exclusion announcement. So, Mr. President, that's what I'm doing. That's what the amendment does, and I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, on and against the amendment. You know, we have a procedure that's set up to deal with capital construction like this, and that procedure is that you take your recommendation to the Building Commission, and they look at it, discuss it, then they make a recommendation to the Joint Appropriations Committee. Then we put in our budget bill, and we bring it to the floor, and then we as a body decide on that. This did not go through that process. And I would submit to you that if it was that high of a priority, it would have gone through that process, and we would, in fact, see it in our capital construction bill. I think the need is there relative to the arguments made by my colleague from Sweetwater County, but to step up and do a $1 million appropriation at this time without truly vetting it and looking at all. And the other thing you have, too, Mr. President, is the prioritization and how you look at which areas are done, who does it first, where, what, and how. I just didn't feel like there was enough consideration given to that process based on what there was a bill that did this, and here we're saying, you know, we're giving you $1 million, go out and fix it. We don't know where it's going to be spent. We're not sure how to prioritize, although they say shall do it, but we don't know what that is and which districts are really going to get it and which ones aren't, and how do you establish the priority. So for all those reasons, I would hope that you would defeat this amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I have two questions for the sponsor of the amendment. One is that the $1 million shall be spent to accommodate females and civilians. And I understand building additional facilities for females, but what is it exactly that civilians do different than military people in the bathroom? And the other question I have is, looking at the map, if you exclude the green stars, that works it out to 15 facilities here, which works out to a little over $65,000 per bathroom. That's kind of salty for latrine facilities. I was wondering, what am I missing in that?
Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, it was my understanding that the National Guard already has a long-range plan to take care of the armories. And in this budget on page 95, there's over $3 million for the Afton Armory, almost $6 million for the Laramie, almost $9 million for a medical armory. So why do we need this bill when it's already appears to be taken care of in the long-term planning by the Guard?
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, can I answer some of the questions? The reason civilians are in there is what happens now is they kick all the men out of the latrine and put an armed guard in front of it, and then the women can go in. And particularly when it's an emergency situation, I can remember last summer during the fire season we used the armory in my community to shelter people, and it was families is what it is. As far as the numbers go, some of these armories will not be worked on, even though that they're in have significant deficiencies, because they are scheduled to either be replaced or consolidated. So it's just ones that are going to be continue to be operated. The other thing is that the military is moving to treating males and females equally. That's they opened up combat. And if you treat a female soldier as a second-class citizen, as a second-class person in your organization, that's the wrong thing to do. It's the wrong message. The Guard is going to be called on more and more, particularly with all this sequestration and all that jazz that's going on. So we're going to rely on our Guard. And whether they're male or female, you got to treat them right. These people deserve to be treated right. So I encourage you to vote for this amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think the reason that it moved out of committee is they saw the effect of several of the places that it would
effect or touch, and so there needed to be a little more discussion on it. But I have to agree with the chairman. You look down the list, and these have been on the process. Those who are on there have been on there for some time, gone through the process, gone through the vetting, gone through the decision-making. And so that's why I'd probably be against the change now. But we have a process in place, and to change it now at the last minute probably wouldn't be proper.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes a second time. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, yes, we do have a process. I think some of the questions that came up is to why we need this one. So, you know, there is, I believe it's Albany County and a few other of the armories are getting full replacements. And there's been considerable money spent on Wheatland and some of these other armories. And for a complete armory replacement, it's 25% state, 75% federal money. And so, you know, to tear it down and completely rebuild it, we can get some federal money. However, a lot of these armories are, you know, in a condition where the structure is sound, but they just need some enhancements, you know, to accommodate the female soldiers, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I know that, you know, we talked about the Guard already has a priority list. They have a list of saying where they already have identified which locations need to be upgraded and are, you know, and they have a list of which ones they plan on attacking first. And, you know, I can say that, you know, that, you know, that the military at this time decided to put that on their back burner and not to do these. I've received numerous calls and went and looked at some of these facilities myself, and I disagree. So that's why I brought the bill, and that's why I'm bringing the amendment. I think this should be a higher priority. I think the good senator from KC articulated the fact that, you know, we do have a growing number of female soldiers that deserve to be treated as fairly. So I ask for your support.
Chief Kirk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson? Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins excused, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 6 ayes, 23 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 1 has failed. Second reading amendment number 11, Senate File 1, the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 11, budget section 300.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 11 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. Again, there was a handout passed out a little while ago that looks like this. It has some charts and graphs on it there. Mr. President, as you know, that, you know, the Section E, 300, paragraph E, creates that SIPA account, our Strategic Investments and Projects account. President, you know, that's funded from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, earnings above the Craig's January 14, 2013 forecast level. Now, the maximum under the current section 300E, paragraph E, is $80.8 million. And what I'm doing here with this amendment changes that SIPA deposit to the SPA level, which is, if you take the 233.6 amount from the 134, you get 99.4, is what that will bring the SIPA level up to, Mr. President. And then the other part of the amendment, and I want to say that this will have no effect on the SPA, the SPRA, or any tips into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. Those are driven by our current statutes. And the two things we're doing in this amendment is capturing the pooled investments income into the SIPA account and then raising the cap, so to speak, on the SPA levels into the SIPA account. Mr. President, and then with the pooled investments, there is no SPA or SPRA associated with the pool investment accounts. And the final amounts captured, those will be unknown until after July 1, 2013. And, Mr. President, part of what I'm doing here is this provision will help alleviate the capital gains forecasting issue. There was always a discussion about, you know, we can't profile capital gains. We always hear about capital gains sometime later. The beauty of this is that, you know, that it still creates investment incomes for us, and it just keeps it, instead of going into the LSRA, we capture it in that SIPA account. And, you know, part of the reasoning, Mr. President, is, you know, we required the governor to fund large one-time projects like the Gillette Madisons and the landfills. And what if more resources are needed for the engineering building? You know, we're not sure of that. And as you know, this isn't a slush fund. It develops interest income, and we control the appropriation out of that account. You know, it actually has tighter strings than the general fund, and we're only capturing the investment earnings over the CREG projected levels. I think that's important to remember. We're only capturing the investment earnings over the CREG levels. And then, as I said, Mr. President, this will help clarify the investment income debate. It's kind of like, I don't know how else to profile that, but we certainly always have that investment income debate. That simply puts it into that SIPA account, holds it there. We have to appropriate it. It still gets investment income and just keeps it from going into the LSRA. And as you can see from the map or from the chart, you know, it has nothing to do with the money going into the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. It keeps all of those tips going to where they should be going. It's just a measure of having that money more, you know, liquid for us or for the governor and for these large investments projects. And it's just a different way of having the money sitting there. I ask for your support.
Senator Meyer.
I think what this would happen, and the sponsor can't correct me if I'm looking at this wrong, essentially you would allow all of that money under the SPA cap to allow the governor to profile that in the next year's budget. And if that's the case, Mr. President, I guess I'd have to speak against the amendment, because as it sets today, we allow the governor $80.8 million to look at big projects that he identifies. But we've only got a little over $30 million that when we come back here, that we can look at big projects that we identify. And if we allow the governor to prioritize all of that money, then when we come back here and we find a project that a big project or some one-time funding that we as a legislative body feel that's important, then we've got to give the governor a black eye and take something away from him. And necessarily, Mr. President, that puts us in a confrontational position with the executive. And right now, we have a little flexibility there. The governor has most of the flexibility, and we just have a little bit of money left on the table. So, you know, if that's what this does, I guess I'd have to speak against it.
Senator Bebop.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, and one of the things is that I have, I think it's a policy decision we have to think about, is it's awfully hard for me to profile anything called capital gains until we actually receive the money. And this is a little bit different than that, because what they're trying to do is, we think there's some money coming and we're going to put it into the SIPA account that we set up for what we think will be some realized capital gains potentially. But let me tell you what this account really does for these pooled gains we have. And we use this account to offset and help balance our shortfalls in the severance and sales tax revenues that we have on our Craig report. And it's a process that we've been using, and this is what these pooled interest income has been utilized for in the past. But the more important thing is that at the end of the biennium, this is one way we have to fund the LSRA. And so if you take this money and now and capture it, A, we don't have any money to offset what may be some shortfalls in severance and sales. And I can't tell you the numbers and percentage of that other than tell you that we have used it that way. But we don't build up the LSRA. So I guess the policy decision for the Senate is really simple. If you want to look at building the LSRA and savings and moving forward to have that protection and also have the ability to utilize this if we have to balance in our Craig reports for savings or for the severance and sales, then you would vote no on this thing, which I think is a correct vote, because this is one way we can build it up, and I think it's important that we do that. So I would ask the body to vote no.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I guess on and against the amendment, the Majority Floor Leader articulated really the strongest reason. But let's make sure everybody understands what's happening. So when we refer to the pooled investments accounts, what you're speaking of are all the monies that sit in the treasurer's office which are not in a permanent fund. So it excludes the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund, the Common School Permanent Land Fund. And at any given time, the treasurer has a pool of money. If you appropriate money to construct a building, and that money sits there for 3 years before the building starts being drawn, it's part of the pooled investments. Agencies have accounts that they hold with the treasurer's office, and they're pooled into this account. Now, under the Constitution, the pooled investments cannot be invested in the stock market. They can only be invested in fixed income and bonds. And as a practical matter is that some of the income off of the pooled investments are earmarked back to the fund that they were invested on behalf of. So if the UW or community colleges have an account there that's being invested as part of the pooled revenues, then oftentimes the income is earmarked back to this. This amendment seeks to say, okay, we're only focused on the income off of the pooled investments that are coming back to the general fund. Now, because they're pooled investments, they have a much shorter prospectus or future that we're investing for, because we're not investing for 20 or 30 years, because so most of this money has to come back out and go to purpose. And much of the income is already forecasted because it is in fixed income. However, there's a component of it that are in the bonds, in bond markets. And when we're talking about capital gains here, we're not talking about selling stocks and things like that. We're talking about a rebalancing of the bond portfolio. And oftentimes you'll buy bonds at a discount, you sell them at a higher price, and they're calling the maneuvering of that bond portfolio a capital gain. And this year, it looks like the management of those bonds is going to generate more revenue than was forecasted. It's not capital gains of equities. The Vice President is exactly right. When Craig estimates all the revenues that come into the general fund, they have various sources. And then when they come back, they might find that mineral taxes were higher than they thought they were going to be or lower. They might find that the revenues off of sales tax are higher and lower, and they ultimately balanced. And you recall in the January, Craig, they lowered some estimates and raised others. So if you want to go and look at all your revenues, the general fund, and say, well, we're going to pick the ones that might have some extra income, and of course, if the other ones are down below, you could end up with a deficit coming back because you can't go out and cherry pick the revenue sources that you want. Because it's not the permanent mental trust fund or the common school permanent land funds, the SPRA have no relevance. We're simply talking about revenues off the pooled income that are dedicated to the general fund. And they're like any other revenue source. Now, it is true that all of the revenues that we collect, if all of the revenues that go in the general fund and the BRA account exceed that which is forecasted, it sweeps into the LISRA account, the rainy season account. But we do want that to grow. But it is imprudent to go out and pick one income source and say, well, that account looks like it's going to be more. Why not do it to the sales tax? Say, if the sales tax come in higher, we'll peel that off. Of course, if anything goes down, then we'll end up with a deficit. I urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to simplify this, we're doing nothing that isn't already in this bill. All we're doing is taking the cap off. They said that they set up SIPA, which is another coffee can, and they've capped it at $80 million. We're taking the pooled investments along with what comes out of your permanent trust fund investment income and allowing it to go all the way up to the SPA being the spending policy amount, which is 5% of the last five-year average of the money thrown off in investment income from the permanent trust fund. So we're not messing with the tip over that goes into the holding funds for that. We are not messing with any projections. We're not saying project what we're going to get in capital gains. We're not asking for that. We're just saying that $80 million plus the pooled investment income will go into this SIPA account, which was set up by your Appropriations Committee, and I appreciate them doing that because we're not here July 1 when it tips over, when that capital gains and pooled investment are realized, and it just goes to the LSRA. We don't really have a say. It just goes there. I believe the LSRA could be an easy appropriation by us. We want to continue to grow it from some of that money, come back and appropriate it to it. But right now, all we're doing is saying up to the spending policy amount will go into that SIPA automatically.
Senator Scott.
President, this there's no money directly in or out in this amendment, but I think it's an important financial decision. I ask for the yeas and nays.
Ayes and nays have been asked for. Just a moment. Further discussion? Senator, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, for your second time.
Mr. Vice President, I want to correct the last description. This has nothing to do with the spending policy amount. The spending policy amount is the amount that we hold in the budget, the general fund, that is income off of the permanent mental trust fund. And because we're only forecasting the fixed income in the permanent mental trust fund, we do not forecast capital gains on equities. And when the equities come in, they're not forecasted, but we committed 5%, up to 5% of those revenues, total revenues, to the general fund. What the Appropriations Committee did is said, to the extent that we have not fully budgeted revenues out of the permanent mental trust fund up to the spending policy amount, that differential of approximately up to $80 million will go into this SIPA account to begin to forward fund some major obligations, one with the Gillette Madison and possibly landfills. But that is money that's generated from capital gains from equities off of your permanent mental fund. Now, that source of revenue is not part of the mix that we forecast revenues to the budget reserve account and the BRA account. That's extra revenue and it's not forecasted unless we were to forecast the whole 5%, which we don't do. And it does not alter the Craig projections one way or the other. The pooled investments, however, to the extent that that money comes into the general fund of the budget reserve, it's relied upon by Craig as one of the sources of revenue, and we have various sources of revenue coming in. And then in the end of the day, some will be low, some will be high, and then it's all totaled together. And when all totaled together, then if there's an amount that's excess of forecast, and we've only budgeted to the forecast, which we're required by law to do to have a balanced budget, then the excess, if it occurs, sweeps into the LISRA account. Now what you're saying is I'm going to go through all of the sources of revenue into the budget reserve account and the general fund, and I'm going to pick the one I like the most that might yield excess revenues and peel it out of the mix. Now what you're putting the Craig Group in is to say, well, what do? We were planning on a whole pool of revenues, and if one was low, one might be high. And now you're saying, well, now when you forecast, you have to assume that this one will, if it generates excess and this one is lower, it won't balance out. And if you can't use this as a balancing account, then your Craig is in a possible position. I urge you to vote no.
Further discussion? Senator Hastert? For a second time?
Mr. President, I think what we have to remember that Craig forecasted the forecast for the investment income. What we're just saying is we're not cherry picking. We're just simply saying that's been a contentious argument for quite some time. And you know, as you know as well as I do, how many years have you gone back home and saw in the newspaper, you know, at the next Craig report and over the summer and had to answer to constituents about the fact that we have a couple hundred million more dollars than what we had before? We're not trying to cherry pick. It says there's forecasted amounts. It's not going to disrupt Craig. It's simply saying that amount, instead of going to the general fund, it's going to go into the SIPA account where we have tighter controls over it. We actually have more controls over it when it goes into the SIPA account than we do in the general fund. We have to appropriate it. And if it's sitting there next session, we can simply say, well, here's where our revenue streams are. Here's what's happened with our projections. We have this pot of money. We're going to put our budget together. And then right in that budget session, we move that money into whichever account we move it into the LSRA, into our rainy day account. But with the unknowns, and we've talked about revenues flatlining, we've talked about a lot of different issues and about, yeah, we want to build the LISRA account, but then we also mandate the governor on certain projects, on large projects, and we still control the strings on it. You know, and it's just going to be a mechanism of kind of identifying those capital gains on there and putting them into an account for these large projects. That's what we're doing.
Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard? Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting? Perkins excused. Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing Vote closed. 7 ayes, 22 noes, and 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 11 to Senate File 1 has failed. Second reading amendment number 12, the reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 12, budget section 300.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 12 to Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. If you didn't like the last two, you're going to love this one. Mr. President, all it does, simple little amendment. Deleted paragraph G out of page 100, and what that does is that language there says a $450 million cap. Anything over the $450 million goes into the permanent, out of the holding account, into the permanent account, and that's the inviolate account. I'm just saying, let's hold that money into the holding account, all the money we have for in the school foundation, into the holding account for this period of time. Nobody's going to spend it. It's not going anywhere. It just keeps it liquid for us to look at for next year. Here again, it generates interest income. It just holds it into the holding account instead of tipping into that permanent account. We've all had discussions about what's happening with school foundation, and I think that this is a wise move to just hold on to that money, keep it liquid. It's not going anywhere. Nobody's going to appropriate it. Nobody can touch it. It just goes in, stays in the holding account for this period of time. We certainly can take a look at what's happening next year and then tip it if we so desire.
Discussion? Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask the members of the Senate to vote no on this amendment. And there's a couple of reasons, and your Appropriations Committee thought long and hard about this. It's really important that we have the discussion because of the $450 million. It's in the PLF holding account, and we wanted to set that there so we would have, if you will, a reserve fund set up in case we get in some trouble with our school foundation program or CAPCON, and that's a good thing to do. What this amendment does, if that tips, we don't put any money into the permanent land fund. And so if you're really talking about building for the future, which we've talked a lot about this session, you want to try to take some excess funds that when they show up and they're available to build for the future, which means putting into the fund, then if you vote for this, you're taking that away. I think we should build for the future. I think if we have a little money saved, we should put it into that fund. It only can grow. And you can imagine, you can make the same arguments why the importance of this is relative to the importance of the Permanent Wyoming Mental Trust Fund to the revenues for the general fund. The other thing that this also does, I think when you put that $450 million cap, if you will, you know, that's kind of the limit, and we can bounce off that as we spend it in the future. It's sort of another way of having a more conservative approach to your budgeting. So I like that additional cap in there, but I still think that anything over that should go to the permanent fund.
Discussion? Senator Meyer.
Mr. President. Mr. President, what we need to look at is in 17-18, you run the numbers out, and we continue to add on these little Christmas tree ornaments that we have on the school foundation program, we're going to be somewhere around $60 million in the red in 17-18 on that foundation program. Now, that's the hard facts. That's what the trends line show. But rather than having a discussion whether we're going to tip $50 million into the Common School Permanent Fund, we should probably have a discussion, why don't we put $450 million in it? So when we get in 17-18, we're not looking at a big deficit. So we really need to start looking at funding that corpus of that foundation, and we need to look at increasing that. We just started on this one. But maybe the discussion should be, how come we're not putting $400 million in it, rather than this discussion by saying, how come we're not going to put anything in
your office?
Thank you, Mr. President. The discussion by the good senator from Goshen County is exactly the reason why this is a concern and why I'm on for the amendment. we do have a possibility where we need some cash flow in the near future based on the projections. If we tie those funds up in the inviolate common school permanent land fund, we can't access those funds. The concept that the vice president, chairman of the Joint Appropriations Committee came up with having the $450 million in the holding account is a wise one. I think what we're recognizing here is that that might not be enough, and to the extent that we see in the near future a necessity to have a holding account available, we want to make sure that that's full at this time. There is nothing that would preclude us from coming back next session and taking that $50 million or $150 million or more than that and putting it in to the corpus. Nothing would preclude us from doing that. This is being cautious. It's allowing us to maintain access to those funds in recognition that we do have the potential for some budget difficulties in the future. We're hoping projections will change and those difficulties will go away. But rather than being an argument in opposition to this, that is exactly the reason why this amendment is being proposed, so that we have access to those funds. Those funds, when they're earning interest, are much less accessible and much less valuable to us in a crisis situation or in a situation where we're short than they would be if they were actually there. Now, they're still earning interest either way. It's not as if they're not gaining revenue. It's just whether or not we can get our hands on them if that type of situation comes forward. So I'd urge the body to support it. Again, it's no expenditure. We're not spending the money on anything. We're not proposing that it be spent on anything. We're just trying to make sure that we've got an extra 50-ish million dollars available to us if the projections remain accurate and it does continue to appear that we might need to access those additional funds in a time of you know, lean times, basically, Mr. President. So I'd urge the body to support it.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, again, this sounds like an important financial decision. I ask for the yeas and nays, please. And, Mr. President, I have a question. As my distinguished colleague says, they're earning money either way, but am I not right in thinking that if it tips into the permanent fund, that the way the markets are currently, the earnings prospects are much better in the permanent fund than they are in one of these holding accounts, which are necessarily invested in short-term instruments that don't pay very well right now?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, over the course of the last 3 years, sometimes our fixed income has been increased over or higher than the permanent mineral trust fund with the equities. Over the past 12 months, your equities have gone up. Look at your 401k, and they've outperformed. Over time, it is expected that the permanent account will have a differential of 2 to 3% higher than the your short-term investments. So, generally speaking, we used to think that our liquid funds were delivering around 5%, our permanent funds about 8%. Now it's more like 3 and 5. So there's generally at least a 2 to 3% differential that is higher in equities, and it certainly is higher if you look over any 10-year span. The equities are going to be much higher. If you look on page 4 of the goldenrod is what you're seeing here, and we've done a couple things to protect our revenues. These are the revenues that at one time we were using to fund the Hathaway program, the higher education endowments. And, you know, our forefathers had some foresight and established the Common School Permanent Land Fund, and we've done nothing since statehood to really put in more investments. So what we've decided as a policy decision is to hold the any transfers out of the school foundation programs, and most of these would be federal mineral royalties that are earmarked for this account. So the extent that we have revenues over expenditures, we will hold $100 million at the end of every fiscal year, and the amounts over that kick into the school CapCon account. School CapCon account then has really two sources of revenue. One is the excess revenues that came out of the school foundation program account, and then co-lease bonuses. To the extent that those two sources of revenues exceed our school capital construction amount, then the amounts flow down in the permanent land fund holding account. When we created that holding account, we wanted to get on a long-term investment or plan where we would send some of that money back to the corpus of the Common School Permanent Land Fund. We did not create any triggers to make sure that when we made these decisions, that we made them dependent on the economic conditions of the time. And the JAC has made an analysis, which I concur, that if we hold $450 million, we will have enough of a buffer to pick up our budgets in the over the next 4 or 5 years or longer, and we can afford then to kick that approximately my old eyes are having about $45 million into the back end of the corpus. And this is a good thing to do. When you start to look at a $1 billion per biennium expenditure and how much we have in our permanent fund to help pay for that, we're well underfunded. You're talking about, my recollection, about $1.3 to $1.6 billion, depending on the market, in that account, and it's well underfunded to pick up a significant part of the education. And our as it stands today, most of our revenues do come off of the federal mineral royalties, and this is a beginning to look forward to build that account for education. I'd urge you to support the amendment.
Support the amendment?
No. Did I say support? Kill it. Kill the amendment.
Kill it.
Yeah.
Belt fell out of my chair, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Actually, I think that everybody's so used to my answer, they knew what I meant.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? Roll call.
Anderson District 2?
No.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines? Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins excused. Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 7 ayes, 22 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 12 to Senate File 1 has failed. Second reading amendment number 27. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 27, budget affected section 300.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. President, I would ask that this be withdrawn at this time.
Without objection, it's withdrawn. Second reading amendment number 21. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 21, budget section 317.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 21 to Senate File 1. Members of the Senate, the other day we had some discussion about the major maintenance component of buildings for our community colleges. And what this amendment does, Mr. President, has tried to bring some kind of uniformity to how we deal with our major maintenance components. And there's a document being passed out for you to look at. And what it shows you, Mr. President, is that before 2008, all education facilities, regardless of construction funding resource, were paid 100% for major maintenance components in the calculations with the state. And then in 2008, up and through 2011, you can see the colleges and the different facilities on there, we paid nothing. And then last year, Mr. President, we went in and paid 100% for five that we appropriated. And there are five that are in this budget bill now that are funded at 100%. And so the purpose of this amendment, Mr. President, is to bring them all to what I would say a consistent policy as we move forward. And that is that we will fund these major maintenance items for these buildings at 100%. And, Mr. President, what it does not include is it does not cover anything with housing, student unions, or auxiliary facilities. The other thing, Mr. President, there is no additional money in this budget to cover some of these that are coming on. Most of them are new anyway, so there wouldn't be in terms of any additional money right now at the major maintenance component, but there will be no money at this particular time. In the future, when they calculate their square footage and those numbers, these could come up to be an item in the future where there might be some additional funds spent. But, Mr. President, I think this brings consistency to how we treat these buildings, and I would ask for your support.
Discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this won't have a lot of effect over the next few years because these are all new buildings, and essentially there won't be any major maintenance on them. But in the whole scheme of things, I think we're going to have to address this because if the way I remember, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong on this, is that the maintenance funds is a set amount, and it's based on a per square footage of the each campus. And as a campus will grow, then the amount of dollars per square footage gets diluted across the whole system. So what we're getting into here now is that with all the building that we've had in the last decade, is that a lot of that major maintenance across the community college system, the dollars per square foot has been decreased substantially. So when these buildings start requiring major maintenance, we're going to have basically a cliff out there that we're going to be dropping over. So, you know, it's something to keep on our radar that we're going to have to address sometime in the next few years, because if we continue to hold that major maintenance constant, yet we allow some campuses to use private funds to increase the square footage in the whole formula, we're going to have some problems with some districts that don't have the economic capacity to fund their major maintenance on their own through their own mill levies. So that's something that's going to happen in the future. I support the amendment as is now because it's going to get everybody on the same playing field. We're not going to have any immediate impact. But that's something we're going to have to keep on our radar, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 21 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That amendment's been adopted. Catch up here. Second reading amendment number 28. Reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 28, budget 319.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I withdraw that amendment at this time.
Without objection, amendment number 28 is withdrawn. Next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 29. The reading clerk will read that amendment in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 29, budget sections 319.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second amendment reading number 29 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, what this does is go back into the budget language, that what we call the Section 319 from the last session, and reexamine what we had asked the executive branch to do. If you go back and look at the original language, which you see on pages 105, you'll see that we had a couple plans in mind. What we told the executive branch that we'd like to see happen is do a 4% of the biennium reduction in the second year of the biennium, which would be 4% of 2 years. The governor modified that and said, well, we'll do 8% of 1 year. I mean, it's call it what you want. It was really the same thing, except that we were looking at a biennialized amount. Then we said we would like to see all the budgets come back at 8% reduction over the biennium. As we looked at the original language, we see that there were some ambiguities as to how you would calculate the 8%. That is, would you calculate the 8% off of the commencement point, which was the standard budget as we began this biennium that we're now working in, or would it be 8% after the 4 to 8% agency cuts? So in the case of your higher institutions, if they've already given up 6.5% of their block grants, would they have to come back and provide a further reduction on top of that? Given where we are and given the exercise they went through today, what this amendment does, first of all, it leaves the old language intact. And frankly, I think as a legislature, that's important to us because it can't be vetoed or taken out. It makes that veto-proof, so this language then tells us where we're going to go. Then it says, in the event that the Craig Group does not lower projections, the reason that's important is because if the Craig were to meet between now and October and lower projections, then this analysis wouldn't be applicable. But let's assume that all things will work well and we come back a year from now and the Craig has not been forced to meet to reduce their forecast. Then what we say is that what we'd like to see happen is that the agencies will provide to the governor a 4, 6, and 8% budget reduction off the last standard budget request. So we make clear that, one, is we want three levels of cuts proposed, 4, 6, and 8, and it's based upon the starting point before we had this budget. Why is that important? Well, if one agency, what we're looking now, which is more important than anything, is we're looking to biennialize our savings. So if an agency came in and said, well, I'll give you 4%, but it's a 4% that cut or a 6% cut that cannot be biennialized, it's really not a fair cut. On the other hand, if you were an agency that did the right thing, you dug deep and you gave a 6% cut, you should be able to take advantage of that. So this idea is that we're going to go look at the starting point, which was the standard budget, at the beginning of this biennial budget. And what we're looking at is a 4, 6, and 8% off of the starting point. So those agencies that actually kicked in, and the higher education is easy because you just give a 6.5% cut to their block grant, that's biennializable. But what this will provide is both the governor and the JAC agency plans on 4%, 6%, and 8% cuts, starting from where we began before these cuts. We're looking at biennialized budgets cuts, and then what we're asking the governor is you make a recommendation whether you think it's be 4, 6, or 8. And then the JAC will then make its determination, but when they make it, they'll have agency presentations on three levels so that they can evaluate which ones to take. Now, a lot of this will be a re-exercise of what we've done this year. But it has to be the case because you simply can't have the situation where you treat everybody the same. Some agencies are all personnel. Some have more to cut. We segregated out health because it was under a special requirement. And it's set forth in E. I'd recommend your favorable support of the amendment.
Discussion? Senator Von Flater.
Thank you, Mr. President. I applaud the idea. I think it's great. But I do have a question. I don't understand the first sentence because it says, in the event they does not meet and revises revenue projections downward, so how do you, if they don't meet, how would they revise the projections downward? Or does it mean in their past projections were down, revenue was down, or they projected downward movement? Or I guess I'm confused by the verbiage on that first sentence.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and a couple of questions. I'm on line 23 and 24. I'm not sure why we exempted the judicial branch out of this. Is there some reason for that? And I'm concerned about the subsection E, lines 26 through 31. We're holding the Department of Health out again and saying get a 6%. Why aren't they just lumped in with all the other agencies? In other words, they will be through their annual cut which we specified for this year, why not get them in sync with all the other agencies, whether 4, 6, and 8?
Further discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Great questions. Let me go through each one. With respect to the first paragraph, lines 15 through 18, which talked about the Craig, all we're saying is that in the event that Craig were to reassemble itself between now and October, which is the normal time, they would only do that if there was a reason to forecast a revenue change. If they came in and they forecasted the change lower, then what we wouldn't want to, I suppose the governor could still ask it, but he might be looking for deeper cuts if that happens. That's not, there's no real art in that other than it seemed to me that as we're looking forward, we're really saying, assuming all things remain the same as we forecasted, except for the October, which is a normal Craig, we all sit back and look at October and say, hey, where are we? So the proposition is that if everything remains the same, then we could probably look at as low as 4%, 6%, and 8% cuts. And some agencies will be able to deliver, some won't, and that's what we found this year. With respect to the judiciary, that was excluded simply because we, the judiciary have tried to make or made the case that they've done their cuts are as low as they can go and they're biennializable. On the other hand, there's no reason why on the next amendment we couldn't take them out on a third rating amendment and say you have to go through the same exercise. I think it's always good for everybody to look at all agencies, so I have no strong feelings there. There's no reason why we couldn't require that they perform the same exercise for us, and it's a great exercise. With respect to the 6%, that was in keeping with the, if you go back to our last proposition, we isolated Department of Health out. We worked on a developing reduction. They were isolated out, and we recognized that there's special circumstances, and this simply rearticulates the last sentence on the Department of Health that they would look for a 6% cut, and it was built in. We need to make sure that we keep them on target where we wanted under the last budget, and they were a little bit different than other agencies because we had built them in a more progressive. And it's the effort there is not to change the understanding that we embarked on a year ago with health, so we isolated them out.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, as we went through the process here, and you look back before the 2015 biennial, there were a lot of agencies that actually that didn't grow when the growth of government was growing, and yet we held in the cuts. And I'm not exactly sure how we look at some exemptions or some, or whether the Appropriations Committee just takes it on a case-by-case basis when we see them. But, folks, there's a lot of these small agencies that we got into cutting some. They've cut the fat. We're getting into cutting the lean now. And so we're going to lose quite a few governmental functions. So the next step for us, I think, is to look at programmatic changes if we have a huge reduction in our revenue. But there are some agencies out there that basically didn't enjoy the growth of government like other agencies have. And I think the main goal is to keep the trend line to go to a flat position. And I think it's important that we pass this amendment to do the exercise. However, I think that there might be some language, if we can figure it out, if the exercise isn't going to be productive, not to have these agencies come in front of us, because frankly it's almost futile if they haven't had the increase in the government spending. Perhaps there's a way that we can make the process run a little bit smoother, because it takes a long time to run every one of these characters through the process. So, you know, there's some discussions that I think we need to have between now and third reading on that. Certainly we get the sponsor, if anybody else that would want to discuss that, is how we could affect that. And there are some other changes, I think, in the general organization of government that we're going to have to look at, because I think they can share some fiscal officers, consolidate some of these agencies. So there's a lot more we can do in reducing governmental expenditures rather than just cutting budgets.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 29, Senate File 1, pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment has passed. Next amendment for consideration is amendment number 14. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 14, Budget 324 Capital Project Funding.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. President, without objection, I'd ask that that be withdrawn. Apparently, there's some problems as to whether it may already be in rule and reg. Thank you.
Without objection, amendment number 14 is withdrawn. Now on amendment number 15. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 15, Budget 330, Employee Compensation.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 15 to Senate File 1 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this goes into the area of employee compensation where there's essentially a retention incentive paid. It was paid out over two different time periods. The way it was structured, one was in December. It was unclear whether that was December 1st, December 31st. The auditor got with me and suggested this amendment to where we would streamline the payment down to one payment in October, in the October payroll. All the other provisions in there remain the same as far as it's figured off the July 1 payroll amount. This simply says rather than 2.5% incentive payments, there's only one payment in October of 1%. It just makes it quite a little bit easier for that department. I think the result is the same. It's just easier to implement.
Discussion? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to have a little discussion on it. I mean, here's where the real change is that if you, going back to how the JAC decided to do it, but if you divide the payments, which are one time, into two installments, your employees have to be there both, so you may have employees coming and going. And, I mean, typically as an employer, you would oftentimes take your bonuses or your payments and stretch them out so that an employee, so you're actually trying to hold retention. And really, I think our auditor runs payroll. That's what their job is to do. But I guess with respect to JAC, was a discussion about how it would impact employees if they're leaving, moving, quitting, that sort of thing. But generally, you'd want a policy that encourages folks to stay.
Further discussion? Before the sponsor takes second time. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if we wanted to move that date back to December 1st, I think it would still work with the auditor. The reason that they had that it was problematic if they did it on December 31st, if there was any mistakes, then you cross over into the next tax season, and you've got a discussion there about when that incentive was to be paid and when it wasn't to be paid. To retain the employees, if you'd rather have it at a later date, if we move that to December 1st, I think that's fine with the auditors. They just didn't want it after December 1st. In respect to having one or two payments, I guess if you move it to the later date of December 1st, then you don't have someone waiting around to September to take a 0.5% then leave, or you don't have somebody necessarily gaming the system in any other way. But it is, frankly, a lot easier to do it for the auditor. With one payment, so they don't have to set up their system differently for 2 different months. They can just set it up differently for 1 month. So I'd ask for the favorable consideration, and I'd certainly support an amendment to go December 1st if that's the body's will.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 15 to Senate File 1 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has passed.
You want to go to December 1st?
We're now on amendment number 22.
Yeah.
Reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 22, budget section 330, employee compensation.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 22 to Senate File 1. Members of the Senate, you should have on your desk a profile for the School Foundation Program. Mr. President, we have an obligation constitutionally to fund our foundation program, as so indicated in all the Washakie court cases, and I'm very cognizant of that obligation and responsibility we have. And in terms of teacher salaries, I wanted to share with you, and I'm sure some of you may not have seen this report, but it's a report that compares our teacher salaries in the region to our other sister states, and I will just tell you that Wyoming is obviously at the top of the list. Around 50, I'm guessing it's 58,000, followed by, I believe it's Colorado at 50, and then it goes all the way down to South Dakota at about a little under 40,000. And the point of that, Mr. President, is to, because we have this constitutional responsibility in our funding model for K through 12, that we in fact continue to do that, and we are. And what this amendment does, Mr. President, it gets into the compensation package that we have that's included in our supplemental budget bill. And when the governor came to the Joint Appropriations Committee with his recommendations, he had recommendations for state employees, which includes obviously the University of Wyoming and the community colleges, but he did not include any kind of compensation package for K through 12. And there were a lot of reasons, and he'd have to tell you all his, but one of the main was is our step increases that now occur to the K through 12 teachers and other kinds of incentive programs that exist there. And with the employees, state employees, we do not have that. And what is the impact of that? If you look at this sheet that I gave you, you can see that if you project it out, if you look at the next biennium, based on the spending we have, and of course in our foundation program, we have about $1.5 billion, and these, of course, this is only the state portion. You still have the local resources that add another $1.4 billion to that. Then you can see what I call the legislative foundation program, and that goes down to $1.683 billion, which is we add another $140 million in additional spending for the year, and then we have the session bills ongoing this time, and you can see those amounts that go on down there, that if we in fact pass all of the bills in session this time, you will see the effect they have cumulative for the next biennium. You'll see that we're just about even. That $100 million is a statutory requirement that we always have that money there. So essentially we're going to spend exactly about the same amount of money that the foundation program generates. You go further on down into the school CapCon account. And, of course, now we're primarily funding that with COLEs bonus monies and some FMRs. You can see that we have the major maintenance component, the School Facilities Commission, and that's $110 million. We have absolutely no capital construction. And in 15-16, we have $336 million. You roll that forward to the next biennium with the same amount of revenue projections and expenditure projections. Expenditure projections, and Mr. President, you need to understand that these projections make some assumptions, and one assumption is there are no ECAs, no ECA for the next biennium or for the next biennium, and then we have a 7%, when these are consistent, what we've seen in the past, a 7% increase in our special ed, special ed is 7.5%, transportation is 7% increase each year, and health insurance 7.4%. So you go to the next biennium, 17 and 18, you can see that we're spending at a $60 million deficit. You look under the school CapCon, we've got 362, once again, all COLE's bonus money with no capital construction. So the point of it is, Mr. President, is to show you that in two bienniums that we are spending more money in the school foundation program than we have the revenues to cover. Getting back to my proposed amendment, Mr. Chairman, what it does, it deletes the one-time 1% bonus to the K through 12, and that's approximately $8.1 million. Both the Joint Education Committee and the Joint Appropriations Committee said no to an ECA. The governor did not recommend it. I will tell you that in the Appropriations Committee, it was a tie vote, and we lost on the tie vote because one more vote was cast and it passed. So I just bring this to you for your consideration. I think there's a lot of reasons why we should not do it, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Discussion. Senator Landon.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and on and for the amendment. You know, I went out of here the last night or two, and serving on your education committee, I've been wondering, you know, we talk about all of our agencies down here in Cheyenne and throughout the state, and we talk about the colleges and university and block grants that we're cutting and, you know, the 4% and 6% and 8%. And then in the back of my mind is this education committee work that we do with the foundation program, et cetera. And I was wondering where that would come from if we decide that maybe our K through 12 system needs to be included in a discussion in terms of watching how much we're spending. And I've been a little concerned about this issue for a couple of years, you know, wondering, because we just ratchet up every year. You know, those step increases and things that happen in that formula funding system that we have, it just made me wonder. And I appreciate the Vice President, you know, literally having the courage to stand up and talk about this, you know. So on and for the amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Schiffer.
Am I wired?
You are now.
Oh, boy, it feels great. Mr. President, I rise in opposition to this amendment. Let's look at who's going to get this bonus. First of all, you took out everybody making over $120,000. Now, that's your district engineers and your highway department, your epidemiologists, your pilots, the skilled professions, the people that went out and qualified to do their job better. You're saying you're not eligible for this bonus. You went out and made it so you could do a better job. You're not eligible. Now we're going in and saying to teachers, you're doing a better job, but you're not eligible for the bonus. Folks, for years, that step was because a teacher becomes better. The first year, a beginning teacher is a really good teacher, but probably not even adequate. You learn over 4 years and 5 years and 6 years to be a good teacher. And what's more, we said to them, you go back in summer school and you get, you know, more knowledge on how to teach or be able, and particularly small schools, wait a minute, you got to go back and qualify to be a history teacher or a social studies teacher or a junior high basketball coach. Well, that's the end of the world. I've been there on that deal. But you got to go back and get it during the summer. And that counts. That moves you down a step or over a step. I forget which way those graphs work. But if you go and make yourself better, that's why you give the step increase. That's what it's for. Make yourself a better teacher, and you've earned it. A year's experience, a year of learning, studying with a mentor, and we put the mentoring project in. Good project. But you'll be a better teacher. And if you go back to school and get another degree or another certification in another subject, it's crucial to your small schools for teachers to do that. And that isn't a pay raise. That isn't a bonus. They earn that. And they pay it right back teaching your kids. And it seems to me we ought to recognize, if you want excellence in education, it's going to be expensive. And to single them out and say, nope, you don't get this bonus. Sorry, folks. That doesn't make sense to me. And I don't mind we didn't give an ECA and those kind of things. But when we've got the money to give a bonus, recognize the people who you expect and you are demanding excellence of, and then you slap them in the face and say, no bonus for you folks. Sorry. I urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think we need a little clarification on the folks that get the retention incentive payment. Everybody's going to get the retention incentive payment, but we're capping the payment at 1% of $120,000. So those folks would get, you know, that made over $120,000 would get $1,200, but if they get made $150,000, they wouldn't get $1,500. I think that's how the language is. If I'll go back with staff and make sure that that's a correct statement, but I think that's how that was structured, that we necessarily didn't eliminate folks that made $120,000 or more, but we capped the payment at 1% of $120,000. On and for the amendment, and folks, this one hits really close to home because my wife's a school teacher. She's been a school teacher for like 37 years. She's at the end of the step. You know, I mean, she's gone clear out to the end. She's got, I don't know, maybe 100 credit hours or something. She never did take her master's degree, but she's capped out. And this is going to take 1% out of her salary. And I'm probably going to have to hear about it, Mr. President. But, you know, I'll live with that. But I think this is the right thing to do from the standpoint that this is not a bonus. It's a retention incentive payment. And folks, when our teachers are getting paid as much as they are, and when you have a vacancy and there's 35 or 40 applicants for that vacancy, we don't have to worry about a retention incentive payment. It's not a bonus. It's a retention incentive payment. So, Mr. President, I think this is a good amendment. Just we're taking off our rose-colored glasses. We're saying $8.1 million doesn't have to be paid with foundation funds because we know what the out years are going to bring. And what this does is say we're not going to spend $8.1 million in foundation money. And, Mr. President, I think it's a good amendment. It realizes just basically the facts that are in front of us, that number one, we can't afford it. Number two, we don't need it.
Further discussion, Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. This one also hits close to home to me. There is a teacher in my household, but I think I can speak for the teachers in my four different districts within my own district. And to single these out, and whether you call it a bonus or a retention incentive payment, something like that, I just don't think it's correct to pull school district employees out of legislature, branch employees, community college employees, or the university employees against the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment and in support of the JAC recommendation. And I understand, having been on JAC, that you say, look, if one member had been gone or one member had been done, not there, there'd been a different result. But it is what it is. The JAC made a recommendation to support the same one-time increase. So this is, and if you look at the language, they were very careful in saying that this increase will not go into the resource block model. So it does not go into the model. It does not expand the model. It's a one-time hit, just like it is for other teachers or other state employees. It's very important. If you look at 111, page 111, line 5, and it says, amounts computed under this will not be considered under the resource block grant. Now, if you go back to the time that the JAC was required to look at the external cost adjustment,
when we did the ECA analysis, and we usually do that in November to send a number to the governor, the recommendation of the JAC at that time was to give no ECA, no external cost adjustment. And we've not given an ECA for several years. No ECA for several years, and a recognition that about 80% of your money that's in the block grant goes to salary. But if you had gone back and looked at the information that was supplied to us, there was an inflation index. There was an inflationary component to all aspects of education. We did look at the data that says teachers are being paid competitively, and the recommendation of JAC at the time was that we recommend no ECA. However, in the event that there were salary increases, one time or otherwise, to state employees, that the teachers be treated alike. And the resulting JAC position was to treat the teachers like other state employees and give them the one-time bonuses. Now, you can look at all the numbers in the world, but part of the reason we want to make sure that we, even in times are hard, we give one-time bonuses to state employees is because we want to make sure we have great employees. I mean, if you're a business and you have to have a transaction with a state agency, whether it be a permitting in DEQ or some other important feature, you want qualified, good employees doing it. There's nothing worse than trying to get a permit out of an agency that can't deliver the permit because they can't deliver the product. Teachers are no different. And when you begin to look at your teachers, you also have to look at the feedstock going in the university. And if the message is that we don't respect our teachers, that we're going to hold them, particularly the mature teachers who have run out of steps, as we've just talked about, if the message is that we're going to treat you differently than everybody else, what will happen is likely to happen is the feedstock that are people that want to go to education are going to choose other professions that are more rewarding. I've always said, I've got my wife's a teacher. I have four children. Not one of them picked education. They just chose fields, frankly, that pay two or three times what educators get. And it's a real commitment to go here. And you really respect those people who have chosen to do that. But you want the best and the brightest to go teach your teachers. And part of it is saying we'll treat you alike. When we can, we'll give you bonuses. In this instance, we'll only give you one-time bonuses because of the strain on the budgets that were described.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, parliamentary inquiry. Is it your view that our rules require a roll call on this amendment, or do I need to call for it?
It would require a roll call.
It does require. Thank you.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you for allowing me to jump up again. I appreciate the majority floor leader walking us through the reminder that this doesn't factor into the block grant, and that does change things a little bit for me. My overall concern remains that, this projection when you get out to 2016, 2017, and I do hope we can have some conversations about how we can land a little bit more softly out there somewhere. I agree with all that's been said. Appreciate the words from Senator from KC. He's absolutely right. And so thank you for allowing me to stand up.
Oh, my gosh. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against the amendment, we've been calling this $8.1 million a bonus. And in reality, it's not a bonus. It is a marginal makeup for the lack of the external cost adjustment. We've been eroding teacher salaries for several years now. Every year you don't give an external cost adjustment is effectively a pay cut because you're eroding the purchasing power of their salary. So as years pass and we don't give those external cost adjustments, we are, through policy, saying we want to cut the purchasing power of teacher salary time and again. And we've been doing that for several years, and it's probably amounted to somewhere around 8 to 10% purchasing power. So this year, through the budget, we've committed $8.1 million to make up roughly half of the purchasing power that will be lost to the teacher's salaries for this year in a one-time sum, which we're calling a bonus. But it's not a bonus. It's less of a pay cut for 1 year. The true force of that will be felt next year when the full value of that external cost adjustment will be lost. And then, of course, there will be another decay through the erosion of inflation of another 2% or so. So they'll feel three more percent in that period of time. And furthermore, this, of course, is the year when the payroll taxes are being raised back up due to the federal policy changes where those are allowed to expire from 4% to 6%. So the purchasing power will go down by 3 or 4% this year. My colleague from across town is talking about the value of these teachers, and I agree with that. This is something that's very important to us and to this body. We made a commitment, a policy commitment, as a legislature several years ago that we wanted to attract the best teachers we could possibly find and value those teachers so that our education system could grow. We've been whittling away that commitment time and again. This amendment is one more step down that road to the point where we're not attracting the best of the best anymore. To me, this is the highest value that a legislature funds, our K-12 education system. I'd cut everything else before I'd cut that system. It is the future. It's our true and best investment in the state of Wyoming. And I'd urge the defeat of this amendment, and hopefully at some point we'll actually start looking at raising some funds again instead of continuing the decay of the teachers' salaries over time.
Representative Barnard. Or Representative,
I demoted you.
Senator.
Ivory Tower has stepped out of his ivory tower and given me some good advice. If you're married to a teacher and she's a good teacher, after she fixed dinner, she goes in and works for another two or three hours that evening to get her lessons ready. I've talked to teachers all over the state, and they all tell me, we are working. Just come up the last year, and I ask you to amend.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and against the amendment, I think the arguments have been made, and there's some discussion about that this is the one time, and how hard our teachers work, the lack of spending power. And I just heard a couple amendments ago that, you know, we've got plenty of money in the permanent or the school foundation account that, you know, we're going to put some money into the permanent fund that we can't touch. So obviously, I think that we did make the decision, and I think we should stick to it.
I'm just irritated. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I think we all need to step back a little bit and ask how salaries are developed at the local level. Now, I spent 3.5 hours with my local school board, the WEA representative, the staff representative, and all the different representatives from the different areas of our school district. And they discussed salaries and compensation issues. And folks, all of these districts have a stair-step method, where the teachers, based on their years of service and the number of hours of continued education, they get raises. And these raises are practically every year because these guys want to move up the ladder as fast as they can. So, you know, it's not like teachers are not getting raises if we pass this amendment. They are getting raises. And the only folks that this really, really affects are these people that are clear out at the very end, maybe, that don't get a raise. Now, our district is a little different that my wife, even though she's at the end of the thing, that district, our district has a policy that even if you're clear out there, you still get a $500 a year raise. Even if you're clear out at the end because you get one more year of service. So, Mr. President, to say that we're not giving teachers raises, even in the absence of a ECA, is frankly flat wrong, because their salary schedules are different than state employees. It's built in. They negotiate for these, and they get raises based on the years of service And based on the number of credit hours that they have in excess of where they graduated. And so, you know, it's most of them are like, you know, a BA plus 15, I think is what we average. But you've got the next, you got a BA plus 30, a BA plus 45, a BA plus 60. And every so many years, you get another 5 or 10%. It's like a 4 and 6. So you'll get 4% increase and a 6% increase. You could get a 10% increase in your salary in 1 year if everything matches up. So to say that teachers aren't getting raises in the system that we have is simply just not correct. They're getting compensated for their time and for their and for their abilities.
People get tired, but we can get through it. How they go? Sorry.
Really, Mr. President, you really want me to say anything else? This has been some great discussion, but just a couple of things that I want to share with the body. And you know, the commitment to our teachers, it's there. You know, look at where we are in the region. We're 25% ahead of everyone else in the region. That's a commitment. Our teachers hard working, absolutely. There's no question about that. And we talked about it being one time, but part of this entire compensation package, and I want you to all understand this because this is important, is there's another bill coming through that's called retirement. And our retirement fund needs to be actuarially sound. And in that, we have to take care of the school foundation. And if you look at this sheet I passed out to you, you will see that for the next two bienniums, each year there's an additional $17 million that we'll pay for the teacher's retirement. That's a commitment. That's included. If we're talking about this salary, we give them the salary, and we do the one-time or the retirement program for them, that's a lot of money. And I just want to understand what you're doing. The 8.1 is time. If you do the retirement that's coming where we pick up the 0.5%, this is a 0.5% next year, that's an additional $17 million each biennium. I just want the body to understand that. This isn't about being committed to teachers. We are committed to teachers. It's about, at this point in time, it's just not the right time to give them a one-time raise. I'd ask you to support the amendment.
Thank you. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout? Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft? Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins excused. Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern? President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Christensen, aye to no. Driscoll, aye to no. Anderson, District 2, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 7 ayes, 22 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, second reading amendment number 22 to Senate File 1 has failed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader? Mr. Majority Floor Leader?
Oh, we're going to take a break?
That would be a good idea.
Have you been drinking too much water? Mr. President, I move that we stand at ease to the sound of the gavel.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Stand and read it. Stand at ease till the end of the gavel. Senator, come back to order. Next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading number 16, second reading amendment number 16, budget affected section 334.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, would advise this amendment does have an appropriation in it, even though it's not a general fund one, it's still an appropriation. Mr. President, this amendment is one of the things that we need to do, fellow senators, to deal with the federal national health reform. What's going on right now with that reform is that it's the federal government is pumping out regulations on a regular basis, and we're expecting them to number, Mr. President, in the thousands. And they are complex, they're difficult to deal with. The insurance commissioner was in our committee this morning on a different subject and said they'd just gotten a new one that was 200 pages long, and it took them a good 45 minutes to understand a paragraph that was that big. It's that complicated. And we are not adequately responding to those. A lot of them have public comment periods. A lot of them affect Wyoming differently than they do many other places. Those folks are not, they're oriented to the large urban settings. They're not oriented to our rural settings. And we're hoping, if we can respond and comment, that they will pay some attention and modify things a bit to fit our particular circumstances. That will happen some of the time, Mr. President, if they hear what our situation is. It won't happen some of the time. And then, Mr. President, we're going to have to pick up the pieces. And the trouble is, we don't have the resources dedicated to that job that we desperately need. And what this amendment does is it goes into the insurance department and the health department, and it tells them to comment on these things, to analyze them, comment on them. Insurance department will handle the ones relating to insurance and the ones that affect individuals. The health department will handle the ones that deal with public programs, which are mostly in the health department. And what the amendment does is says they'll look at them, analyze them, draft responses as appropriate for the commissioner, insurance commissioner, the director of the health department, or the governor to respond to the federal regulations. We'll keep the joint appropriations and joint labor committees appraised of what their activities are, what's going on. And then when something goes wrong and the feds do a final regulation, it messes something up here, and we need to come in and pick up the pieces, which I think, Mr. President, is probably going to be a theme of the next 2 or 3 years in the health area, is picking up the pieces where there's something that just didn't work in Wyoming. They'll help us understand what the problem is and what the remedies are. That's what the rewrite on the language does, and it doesn't contemplate the committees responding to individual regulations. Is just way too many of them. This is different from some of the natural resource areas where you have one particular regulation causing problems. Here there's so many of them that we get overwhelmed. And what it does is it goes in to the insurance department, which is, you know, it's a small agency. Its staff is dedicated to its existing functions. You've got to look at these things right now. You've got the commissioner himself, you've got his deputy, and maybe his legal expert some of the time, and that's it. And they've got other duties. This will add one full-time permanent position, one time-limited position there, and the appropriation is out of the Insurance Department Special Revenue Fund, which comes from an assessment on the insurance companies, who are one of the pushers of this concept because they're getting caught with this flood and not understanding them, too, and they want another set of eyes looking at them. So even though they wind up paying the bill eventually, this is something that they need and help instigate. And then for the health department, they already have a staff that was, we explained to me, the whole, they raided out of the governor's office, but they do need another position, which they have the funds for, but they can take it from a vacant position, so there's no additional appropriation there. And that will get us, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that it'll be enough for everything, but it'll get at least the most important stuff done. And I would urge the Senate to adopt this amendment. It is very much needed if we're going to understand and have any influence at what's coming at us out of Washington.
Any discussion? Question's been called. All those in favor? Oh, wait, this takes a roll call. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
No.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines. Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins excused, Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
no.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 25 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote. Second reading amendment number 16 to Senate File 1 is passed. Next amendment for our consideration is amendment number 17. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 17, budgets affected, addition to 300 sections.
Senator Kraft, what is your pleasure?
Thank you so much. Mr. Minority Floor Leader, I move second reading amendment number 17 to Senate File 1, and I would ask for your favorable consideration. This amendment just deals with the Early Childhood State Advisory Council. And this council was recently reauthorized by our governor with an obligation to compile information on the quality and availability of programs and services related to early childhood education in Wyoming. The charter of this group clearly defines their tasks, clearly defines what they're supposed to do. They're doing some really excellent work in this very important part of our educational process. But at this point in time, there's no reporting requirement for them. So we would like them to be able to report back to us the fine work they're doing and the results they're coming to, and we really feel that the Joint Education Committee is the appropriate vehicle. So all this does is just say the Early Childhood State Advisory Council will report to the Joint Education Interim Committee. August 1st was the date that they thought they could absolutely meet. That's it, and I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Normally, I'd be a little concerned about this. The early childhood education functions, the child development centers, are located in the health department. And there's a reason for that. Many of the issues involved are particularly with children that have developmental delays. We're trying to solve the health issues before they get to school, and I think that's an important to maintain that distinction. I'm afraid know how to say it politely, Mr. Chairman, but risk is with some of the education things that they try to push formal education too much into the preschools when that's not really so age appropriate, but learning language, dealing with physical developmental delays and things like that are what the preschool DD programs do. This probably has a wider sweep, including some of the private child care operations. But, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to make a jurisdictional row with Education Committee, particularly as Committee 10 is going to be overwhelmed with things regarding the national reform and the consequences of that.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the Chairman of Labor makes an excellent point in regard to kind of where the obligations are for early childhood. But I would say that the purpose of the amendment is, in light of all the talk that we have in our children's readiness coming into kindergarten, those issues around nutrition, a lot of other issues, whether or not we can get children reading at grade level by grade 3. This is just another way for education not to take on a more of a burden or not to take a responsibility for those young children away from anyone, but just to better educate ourselves in regard to what's out there. And it's, I think, primarily, like the good chairman said, a broad sweep just to get some information and just to see what's really out there. So I would, again, urge your favorable consideration with the idea that I did hear the Chairman of Labor loud and clear.
Further discussion? No further discussion. Senator Kraft.
Just really quickly, the actual mission of this advisory council is to facilitate statewide collaboration. So I'm quite sure that all of the various groups will be involved and the information will be disseminated, and I would urge your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kraft. Question is called on Senator Kraft's motion that Amendment number 7, second reading amendment number 17 to Senate file number 1 pass the Senate. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed the Senate. Passed second reading. My apologies. The next amendment for your consideration is second reading amendment number 18 to Senate file number 1. Will the reader please read the amendment?
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 18, budget addition to 300 sections.
Senator Ross, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Minority Floor Leader. I move second reading amendment number 18 to Senate File 1. Ladies and gentlemen, what this amendment does is, unbeknownst to us, we had created a statute 95109, which is entitled Task Force on Capital Building Rehabilitation Restoration Composition Duties and Account and so forth. What we didn't catch until after the due date for bills to be filed was that there is a sunset in that statute, and that task force terminated on December 31st of 2012. So in order to move things forward, this particular amendment is to get us through until we can come back next session. We can pass the statute at that time. But basically what this does is it reconstitutes the task force. You'll see on paragraph F on page 2 that it terminates on June 30th, 2014, which is in commensurate with if we pass a law next session. There is an appropriation in here of $10,000, which is to simply pay for the task force to continue to move forward, to have those meetings. What had happened before was simply that LSO was using it out of their kind of contingency fund for myself and Representative Illaway and Zwanzer and some to do that with with the approval of Management Council. So, I'd urge your favorable consideration of this amendment. It is part and parcel of the whole idea of moving forward with the capital renovation. It's still several years out by the time we get phase one and phase two done, and then we'd have to come back and fund phase three, and then we have to consider where we're going to move. And so you're looking at 2017 or something like that before it actually happens. But urge your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, a question for the sponsor. Did he forget to put former Senator Mockler's name on this amendment, or is that an open?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I would advise that I think that, well, I advise everybody, I'm going to vote no. I think this whole capital restoration is, frankly, a luxury we could put off for quite some time, and I think this is just one more part of the effort to move this freight train forward, and I think sooner or later we need to derail it because it's going to be extraordinarily expensive, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Anderson, 28.
Mr. Chairman, Section 3037 we just approved on item 17, is that going to be Section 337 twice?
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Is there any more discussion or questions before the sponsor takes his second time? Seeing none. Seeing some. Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, I think this is a good amendment. And I've been around here a long time. Not as long as the guy that's going to vote against it has, but close. And this project, you know, really started, you know, right up here. If you look at these windows up here, we started with that. That used to have copper over the top, and we opened those up. We've got some artwork in this building. You know, there's no fire protection in this building. Everybody thinks that those two gallings are the most valuable thing in there. That sharp at the end of the, right up there is the most valuable picture in this place. So we've got a lot at stake. This is the people's building. Belongs to the people of the state of Wyoming. We owe it to them to preserve it. We need to restore this building. And we need to do it as quickly as we can. And this whole thing got derailed or sidetracked after former Senator Mockler, as was mentioned, she was a pusher on this stuff. So I would urge that you support this amendment. It's a good amendment to get this thing back on track. Let's do what is the right thing to do for this historic old building.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Question having been called. Question is on the motion by Senator Ross that second reading amendment number 18 to Senate File 1 pass. All those in favor? Roll call vote is required to the appropriation. Will the reading clerk please read the roll call?
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins excused. Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Fleitern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 26 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
Second reading amendment 18 has passed. Mr. President.
Next amendment for our consideration is second reading amendment number 23. The reading clerk will read it in.
Senate File 1, second reading amendment number 23, budget addition to 300 sections.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 23 to Senate File 1. Members of the Senate, the purpose of this is to see what we can do to eliminate some duplicative reports that go on in our K-12 education system. And how many of you had some comments or visited with teachers and talk about all the reports they fill out and the extent that they go to do these and whether they're even utilized by our department? Just it's just something we need to take a look at. So the purpose of this Section 337, Mr. President, is to ask the director of the Department of Ed to assess and review all the reports and report back to the Joint Education Committee by November 1st, 2013, whether or not they, in fact, that some of these are duplicative and maybe we can do a better job of eliminating some of these. And I can remember talking for many years with the superintendent and teachers about this. Just the other day, I was visiting with a teacher, and she said she just filled out three or four reports, and each one of them had the same kind of information that she had to report over and over and over. So that's the purpose of this, Mr. President. Let's see if there's some reports out there we don't need, and we can eliminate them.
Any discussion? Ready for the question? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 23 to Senate File 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment's been adopted. We have no more amendments.
Hey.
Senate File 1 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1B, third reading will begin the second legislative working day after second reading is completed. That means Friday. Do we have anything before? Standing committee reports. Let's get them out of here now. We'll do.
February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 249, Budget Reduction Implementation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Meyer. No, Senator Hastert. Excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 66, Engrossed Municipal Solid Waste Facilities, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 248, State Building Commission Staffing, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Meyer. Excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. Brenner, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 250, Public Employee Retirement Plans, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, and Meyer. No, Senator Hastert. Excuse, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 6th, 2013, Mr. Brenner, Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 65, Engrossed Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, House Bill 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facility, which was just read in, has an appointment and needs to be reassigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 66 will be reassigned or re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate can resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Not happening. Senator Anderson, 28.
The Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill number 54. The clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 54, High School Equivalency Certificate, sponsored by the Education Committee, an act relating to high school graduation requirements. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Cole, Chairman.
Mr. Cole. Senator Cole.
Mr. Anderson. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cole.
I move Committee the Whole rise and report. It do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 54 and defer to the shorter senator from Natrona County, Senator Landon.
Hey, that thing doesn't work very good. Oh, there it goes. No, it didn't. Didn't stay on. Do I have to shut him off there?
Senator Landon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Speaking of the vertical thing, I always tell people I've got a better angle from down here. This little House Bill 54, Senators, shouldn't take us quite as long as Senate File 1. This is a bill that came to the Joint Education Committee during the interim, fellow senators. You'll recall that our high school equivalency certificate programs are housed underneath the community college system. And the community college group came to us with the request that we move away from a proprietary connection to the general education development exam. A number of states have moved away from specifying this test because of its proprietary nature and instead have gone to language in their statutes which simply states high school equivalency. The costs of the particular test that we are married to at this point have escalated pretty dramatically. That company has placed some additional restrictions in terms of how our students can take that test. In testimony that we received in front of the committee, it's not that we're clamoring to get away from the GED. It's just that community college system would like to be able to avail itself to alternatives that are out there in the marketplace. There are other instruments that can provide for a high school equivalency. So I'll take you to the bill real quickly, Senators. The meat of the bill is on page 2 and 3. When you go to generic language, as you see at the top of page 2 where we strike the general education development reference and simply go to a generic high school equivalency certificate, when you do that, you have to go into 2116-1308 and make sure that aligns with your Hathaway scholarship programs, et cetera. And you'll see where we do that over on page 3. As currently written, it's all referencing the GED. And this language, as you can tell now, simply genericizes that and references the high school equivalency certificate. We charged the community college system with coming up with the rules and regs to make sure that any change in language will allow for any other instrument to be used, and I think that pretty well covers the bill, Mr. Chairman. Be glad to try to answer any question. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Just a question. What does this do to those people that before this, if they got a GED, they had a high school diploma? We often see, particularly in the job market, the requirement, high school diploma required. What's this going to do to those people?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to my good colleague from up north, same kind of certificate. It just will not reference that particular company, which has as its instrument name the GED. So both are considered, a GED is actually considered a certificate. This genericized test, of whichever kind, and there are several out there, but they would be considered certificates as well. And so all would be treated equally, and we've been assured of that. And so as you'll notice in the language up above, we do strike diploma, but we've been assured that was a certificate before and will be a certificate after this.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, then just one follow-up. Will they be eligible to enlist in the military?
Senator Landon.
Thank you. To my friend from KC, I'll have to find that out specifically because we didn't ask. I'm assuming that all will remain equal if we avail ourselves to these other products. They've assured us that they will. But I will find that answer and get back to you. Thanks.
Sensing the body's ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 54, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion carries. Got to read it? Oh, House Bill 54 passes the Senate. Then I give that to you. Oh, the Committee of the Whole. Excuse me. Next bill is House Bill 59. Reading clerk will read House Bill 59.
House Bill number 59, Banking Act Amendment, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. And act relating to banking and finance. It was assigned to committee number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 59, Banking Act Amendments. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll yield to Senator Cooper to explain the bill.
Senator Cooper.
Excuse me. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. And we got a twin over there. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 59 came about because the result of what they call the Dodd-Frank Act, which was an act of the U.S. Congress in banking. And one of the things it did is it allows the state banks within our state and other states also to be more competitive and to be able to do a few things that they weren't able to do under previous laws. So what this does is, looking in the introduction, and amends the bank statutes to comply with federal statutes and regulations repealing conflicting and repealing conflicting provisions. And if you going through the bill, turn over there to page 2 at the top, you'll see that there's a definition of bank holding company. Now, this has been in the statute for quite a while, but one of the requirements within that statute was a interstate banking by merger is no longer required under the Dodd-Frank Act. So you can see that they've struck out their 13.2.801, and that, as you'll see in the end of this last page of this bill, that has been repealed because it's no longer required. And then it adds back in then in 18.2.802 the definition in the statute of what a bank holding company is. If you move on down to the next section on the same page on line 10, it talks about remote electronic terminals, and these are what we commonly know as ATM machines. I'm sure most of us are familiar with those. And then in that section on line 16, you can see where it talks about a placard that has to be a visual placard that used to have to be posted next to the ATM machines. And what they found out was happening there, over time, those placards were being destroyed, but also a few folks got real creative and began destroying them and taking pictures of them and then suing the bank for not having them because it was in federal statute that that sign had to be there. So anybody who's using ATM, you knows on the video now, though, is a listing of the charges that you're going to be charged if you use an ATM service. And that's what all that was about. It was just a placard to warn people who are using these ATMs, hey, if you use this thing, you're going to be charged for it. That's no longer required because it actually is on the video on the front of the screen every time you use the machine. And so, anyway, that's what that was about. Moving on to the next section, 13.2.702, actually at the bottom of page 2 and going up page 3, you can see in there on little A, it says, where prior approval of the state banking commissioner, a bank may establish and operate one or more branches in any location in this state, and you can see where it says, or in a state other than Wyoming. And so that's part of the Dodd-Frank Act, and what it changed is, under the old rules and regulations and statutes, in order for you to become a branch bank in another state, you had to literally go in and merge with another bank and to become a branch. And that's no longer required. And in order for our state banks to be competitive with state banks in other states then and have branches in those states, that was added into the law and revised. Moving down to line 7 there and 8, you can see that there was a strikeout there, Wyoming branch, and then it was taken out by means of interstate mergers, and that's also part of this Dodd-Frank Act. Interstate mergers are no longer required for branch banking, so that was taken out. Going down towards the bottom of the page in section 13.2.803, this also you can see on lines 18 and 19 there, and also 20, where there's a strikeout where it says pursuant to the interstate merger transaction. There again, mergers are no longer required, so that was stricken from the law. And also, if you look down on lines 21, it was also taken out again. And then there was just to make the words flow, they added establishment of a branch bank on lines 22. Moving over then to the last page on page 4, you'll see there was a change there on line 2 in the statute. Let's see there. That also had to do 13.4.104 is repealed at the bottom of the page, and we'll talk about that because that has to do with mergers also. 13.2.702B was added, which just describes a filing fee that's required for in the statute for branch banking applications. Getting down to the repealers there in Section 2, all those have to do with
the fact that it required at one time in under the old law merger with an in-state bank in order to have branch banking, and this just simply repeals those sections of the law. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, that's basically what this is all about, the Dodd-Frank Act. Thank you.
Question has been called for. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 59, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 59 has passed the Committee of the Whole. You don't want that one. The next bill for your consideration is House Bill 60.
House Bill Number 60, Money Transmitters Act Amendment, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to trade and commerce. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 60, Money Transmitter Act Amendments. There are no standing committees, and I'll yield to Senator Ruffus for our next explanation.
Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually the right one I'm supposed to be standing up for. So if you like the last one, you'll love this one. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill that was brought to us by the Division of Banking. It provides some clarifications of language within the Wyoming Money Transmitters Act and then has a little bit of a policy change, which is more of a clarification also, but we'll get to that. It basically does three things. The first thing is that it describes subdelegates, and I'll describe that in a little bit more detail in a second. The second is that it provides clarifications on two other provisions. As we look through the bill itself, moving to page 3, probably the most important point in the bill and what it does over and over again is refer to this concept of a subdelegate. A subdelegate means an entity designated by an authorized delegate by written contract to engage in the business of money transmission on behalf of a licensee. The purpose of this bill overall, and the purpose of the Act, is to clarify how transmission of money through payday lenders, through cash cards that you'll buy at your grocery store that have stored value, how all of those are going to operate in terms of a relationship between a licensee that actually acts as the entity that controls the money or receives the money and delegates that are selling those, which might be the payday lender or it might be the grocery store. As the business of this money transmission has progressed, there has come a situation where you have effectively a subdelegate. So you have the selling entity that is acting as a delegate for the licensee wanting to then further sell through some other entity, which is then a subdelegate. There wasn't statute that was effectively allowing for that. So the primary purpose of this bill is that the Banking Division came back with some amendments to the Act such that it would allow for that subdelegation of authority and provide the proper relationships there. So the definition you can see is on the top of page 3. There's going to be reference to it throughout the rest of the bill. The second thing that this legislation does is in line 7 through 11 of page 3, it specifically includes the language describing Wyoming residents, comma, for personal, family, or household use, comma. And this is a cleanup. The department was finding that there was some concern whether or not a Wyoming resident also included a corporation, which is a common problem that we have in our statutes. They cleaned up the language to try to clarify that, no, in fact, this is supposed to be towards humans, not corporations, and they provided language that helped to clarify that. You could see that on page 3. On page 5 is the third purpose of this legislation, this cleanup language, which
lines out and stored value, referring to outstanding payment instruments and stored value. Now, this is going to cash cards and other such concepts. The fact that they were including and stored value caused some concern because it seemed to delineate it as something different from stored value. They didn't mean anything different. It was actually the same thing. But to the extent that they had in statute two different phrases that seemed to imply the same thing, that led to confusion that they wanted to clear up. They're striking and stored value because payment instruments includes the stored value on those payment instruments, which is effectively what they regulate. So it was redundant, and they wanted to strike the additional language. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the bill is simply language that provides for consistency. You can see on page 6 the addition of or subdelegates on several occasions to include that possibility. On page 7 at the top, you see or stored value, and then you see a few more instances of both stored value being struck and subdelegates being included. On page 8, again, we have further designations of or subdelegate. The strike on lines 11 through 13 for the language there on page 8 is actually included on page 9, where we'll go to now in lines 14 through 16 is a specific call-out that discusses delegates or subdelegates and the need for consent from the commissioner. There's additional language clarifying on lines 9 through 12 of page 9 of what a subdelegate should do in terms of remitting all the money owed to the authorized delegate or licensee in accordance with the terms of the contract, and then additional conforming language on pages 10 and 11 to include subdelegate as necessary, and finally the same thing on page 12. Largely, this is just an update of language. There are no significant policy changes in this, and it was brought to us again by the Banking Division. There were no objections to this legislation. I'd answer any questions or call for the question.
Senator Meyer?
Yeah, I guess the question I've got, I look at the license required, and it says any person engaged in the business of money transmission in person, if they advertise, offers, or provide services to Wyoming residents. So are we saying that anybody that has a cash card at a department store has to be a license, anybody that has a restaurant card, anybody that sells cash cards at a big box store, does a big box store have to have a license? Because it seems like they're doing this, they have a card and they're providing that service. I'm just wondering how broad this is. I'm just curious.
Senator Ruffus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To my good colleague, the answer to that question is no. Those entities would be delegates or subdelegates in those situations. The licensee is going to be the entity that effectively acts in a banking capacity. The stores would be delegates or subdelegates. They would have to be listed by the licensee on an annual basis or an update as this is an entity that we have delegated the sales authority to. So that will be included in the licensee's application or updates to the application, but those stores would not have to make a specific application. It's just referencing the contract that the licensee, which is kind of the bankish entity, would have with those stores. I hope that clarifies it.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 60, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. House Bill 60 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 61. Would the clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 61, Banking Division Nationwide Licensing System, sponsored by the Minerals Committee. An act relating to trade and commerce. It was referred to Committee number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Ruffus, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 61, Banking Division, Nationwide Licensing System. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll yield to Senator Cole to explain the bill.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll see if I can speed right through this bill here. Banking Division Nationwide Licensing System, I want to emphasize, first of all, that a database is required under federal statutes, and this just provides a more efficient way to do it. If you look at the bill, you'll see in the title, it authorizes the use of a nationwide licensing system for licensing activities regulated by the Division of Banking under only the Uniform Consumer Credit Code and the Money Transmitter Act. So you'll see when I go through this, there'll be duplicative language starting on page 9 that applies to the Money Transmitter Act. I'll only go through page 9. Requires fingerprinting and background checks, including criminal history records checks for licensure. Provides authority to the Commissioner of the Division of Banking to implement nationwide licensing systems. So to get to the bill allows the Division to utilize a Nationwide Licensing System, NMLS, which stands for National Mortgage Licensing System, as a tool in the processing of license applications for each of the licenses issued by Division under these laws. In addition to mortgage lenders, mortgage brokers, and mortgage loan originators, the Division, that being the Banking Division, is also responsible for regulating and licensing six other financial service industries. Those being money transmitters, pawnbrokers, post-dated check cashers, sales finance companies, supervised lenders, and rent-to-own. I want to emphasize that this bill does not alter the Division's ability to approve or deny a license application. This bill authorizes the Division to require criminal and financial background checks for applicants to use in its evaluation for granting a license. The requirement here is consistent with the procedures already in place for applicants to conduct business in the mortgage industry. This is an important point right here. Current licensees would not have to undergo any additional reviews, and the new background check requirements will only apply to future applicants. This expanded use of the MLS would be optional for current licensees and new applicants. They would, however, still be free to file a paper application. License applications may be submitted through the NMLS, National Mortgage Licensing System, which provides uniform application processing functions for all states and also provides a tracking mechanism for states to share information back and forth regarding current and former licensees. So once the NMLS has compiled all of the information necessary in a license application, the information is forwarded back here to the Division of Banking for final review and approval or denial. The Division can also review information contained on the registry about each applicant who has previously been licensed in any state to see if any agency out there has ever taken any regulatory action against that person or entity. Licensees will be able to manage their license with the state electronically. I think that's important. Data security protocols have been established, and the NMLS maintains FISMA, that stands for Federal Information Security Management Certification. FISMA and all this other stuff here. As a matter of fact, I'm suffering from a little FISMA right now. Currently, 58 state regulatory agencies, including the Wyoming Division of Banking, use the NMLS for licensure. By year in 2013, approximately 26 states will utilize NMLS for processing other licenses. So we're moving towards a single coordinated licensing process. I think that's important. It will provide increased efficiencies for state agencies and industry. These include savings through having processed state fees, ease of coordination with other participating state agencies, and a streamlined renewal process. Very quickly, if you look at the bill, I want to draw your attention just to a couple of things. There's a couple of things in the definitions on page 3, who a channeling agent is. And this isn't somebody fishing for catfish, I can tell you that. Third-party licensing system that gathers the application information and distributes it to Wyoming for review. And registry, which means the nationwide licensing system and the registry maintained by the state regulatory registry. With that, Mr. Chairman, if you get over on page 5, it talks what the applicant submits to. It talks about how DCI and others, including the FBI, can get involved. Paragraph 8 on page 5 determines the content. Bottom of page 5, you'll see where the monies are deposited from the administrator with the state treasurer and credited to the Consumer Credit Administration account. With that, Mr. Chairman, the rest of it is all pretty much self-explanatory with the previous explanation. Try to answer questions. You will see on page 7 what has to happen, fingerprints, personal history and experience at the bottom of page 7, an independent credit report, top of page 8, and plus other information related to any administrative, civil, or criminal findings by the government jurisdiction. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's my explanation on the bill. You'll notice on page 9 we start with the Money Transmitter Act part of this. That's where we have the same stuff we just had in the Uniform Consumer Credit Code. Stand for questions on House Bill 61.
Thank you, Mr. Coe, for that short explanation. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I was called out. Could the gentleman please repeat his explanation of the bill?
Sensing the body is ready to vote, all those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 61, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
Motion carries. The House Bill 61 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 64. Would the clerk please read the House Bill 64?
House Bill number 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemption, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to economic development. It was referred to Committee number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rafa, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemptions. There was no standing committee amendment, and I'll yield to Senator Rothfuss for the explanation.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this goes into the sales and use tax exemptions for data centers that we put into statute a few years ago and amends the language slightly. There are two types of data centers. One is an enterprise data center. The other type of data center is called a co-location data center. Both of them are the same scale, the same type, but a co-location data center allows for the situation where you would have multiple businesses with data stored or used on the servers in one data center. We accidentally prohibited this sales tax exemption from being applied to that situation. As written, it would only be applicable to enterprise data servers, which wasn't the intent. The Wyoming Business Council brought this to our attention and asked us to amend the language, as you can see on page 2, lines 10 through 18, indicating that instead of it having to be one entity that's occupying the facility, it can be one or more entities. Therefore, it would allow for a colo instead of just an enterprise data system, and that's basically the bill, an amendment of language to expand it to its original intent. With that, I'd answer any questions. Call for the question.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we can't let a tax exemption go without at least somebody talking against it, so... I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. Glad you asked. you know, Wyoming, the best place for data centers for two reasons. Low electricity rates, low cooling loads. They don't need the tax exemption. Major, major, major companies, you know, and what are we doing here? Do we have any proof whatsoever that the tax exemptions do any good for us? We don't. The reporting from on tax exemptions from the Department of Revenue is inadequate. It's not entirely their fault. Nobody does real economic studies or econometric studies, Mr. Chairman, to actually find the, whether the tax exemptions are doing what the proponents say they will. So if you're in a corporate board sitting somewhere around this country and you say, well, we could build in Wyoming. God, it's awful attractive there. They've got good cooling load and they've got a good labor force. It's an educated labor force. And the taxes, there's no income tax. There's a lot of real good reasons to go there. By God, what do you think? Everybody says, let's go, let's go. And they said, hey, I got another idea. Let's ask them for a tax exemption because they give it to everybody else. And we're going anyway, but we won't tell them that. That's exactly what happens every time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this doesn't create a new tax exemption. It clarifies the old one to the original intent of it. This was a conversation that we had a couple of years ago, and I certainly think that would be an interesting study and something that we should look into. But, you know, this train has left the station. Perhaps in future trains we should have that discussion. But I agree with the fact that we should do more investigation. But, again, this is a clarification of original intent that is a far smaller issue than an entirely new tax break. I'd ask for the question if there's no further questions.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would disagree with that characterization. Mr. Chairman, we limited the size of the tax exemption in the last time around. This just says, well, if two of you get together, we'll give it to two of you. So it's always like nickel and diming us, only it's millions and millions us, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 64, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion carries.
Division.
Division has been called for. Is that a stand? All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise.
It passes? Huh? Yes.
House Bill 64 passes. Diana, will you give me those other bills? Oh. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Where's that one? You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
I'm done.
I wanted to do the rest of those, Dan.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 54, do pass. House Bill 59, do pass. House Bill 60 do pass. House Bill 61 do pass. And House Bill 64 do pass. Senator Anderson, 28, Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's been adopted. And we have adopted the Committee of the Whole report. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday. We'll try March 7th.
March 7th.
February 7th. Tomorrow.
Announcements, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment in S-15. We'll take up House Bill 108, Food Freedom Act. We worked on it, but we have to finalize it tomorrow night. House Bill 71, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. House Bill 117, Administration Rules, Takings Assessment. House Bill 109, Engrossed, Interstate Shipment of State Inspected Meats.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs will meet in 10 minutes, room S-14, to take up House Bill 127, Engrossed, Driver's License, Veterans Designation. House Bill 150, Bonds for Certificates of Title. House Bill 152, Engrossed, Vehicle Accident Reporting. And House Bill 158, Engrossed, Vehicle Registration Timing.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee number 3, Revenue, has a revised notice out. We will meet Thursday, February 7th, 30 minutes after noon recess, to take up House Bill 175, Juvenile Citations, Notification by Law Enforcement. And we've postponed 215 until Tuesday, February 12th.
Further announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have an announcement for rules?
Yes, sir, I do. Mr. President, the Rules Committee, Committee number 2, will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. and
12.
You're right, it is 12. 12 in your office, considering the file, following House Bills, 49, Legislature Certificates of Attendance, House Bill 50, Distribution of Bills, House Bill 57, Constituent Service Allowance.
Further announcements? You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's adopted. Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, February 7th.